The appellate court ruling on Obamacare goes schizophrenic. Also, the president's speech reveals more weakness than strength. And finally, looking at the 2012 elections, will the GOP lead with their winning punches against Democratic-led government coercion or with their lame swats against gay marriage? We have assisted me in the opining department, two old friends of the show. First, David Massey. Actually, these guys are going to be sort of rivaling one another, going to have a little debate, if you will. I'm going to be as even-handed as I can with these two. First, the always erudite David Mascio, op-ed editor of the Washington Times, formerly of USA Today. Dave, good to have you back.
Great to be here.
And on the other side, some loser named Levine. Okay, now on to the question.
Now, wait a minute, Adam.
Hey, buddy, how are you? Mark Levine joining us.
I feel the cards are a bit stacked against me already. What is it?
Former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. radio host on Pacifica Radio's WPFW. You want to learn more about him, you can always go to marklevineradio.com. Again, marklevineradio.com. Mark, good to have you back as well, buddy.
Thank you, Al.
Guys, let's get right to it. Dave, I will start with you. This is appellate court ruling on Obamacare does seem a bit schizophrenic. I was talking with Tony Blankley. Now, this thing came out in defense of Obamacare, essentially saying that it is legal, it passes constitutional muster. But what I was amazed to see, and you may have caught this as well, though it was in a rival paper, I'm looking at here at the Washington Post, and there was this Justice Sutton, and he seemed to undermine his own concurrence with the government's position. Now, he wrote that the government has the better of the arguments, and that, quote, Congress did not exceed its power in passing the individual mandate, but he also appeared to acknowledge that his word would not be final, writing, quote, the Supreme Court has considerable discretion in resolving this issue, unquote. And it goes on, and in a phrase that heartened conservative opponents of the law, Sutton questioned whether the legislation will have other, perhaps unintended consequences, quote, that brings me to the lingering intuition, shared by most Americans, I suspect, that Congress should not be able to compel citizens to buy products they do not want. If Congress can require Americans to buy medical insurance today, what of tomorrow? Could it compel individuals to buy health care itself in the form of an annual checkup or, for that matter, a health club membership? And I'm thinking to myself, David, whoa, wait a minute. This from the guy who supports the bill? I mean, he seems to be undercutting his own concurrence. What am I missing?
Well, I think you're missing the fact that this whole thing is a sideshow. Yay. Another lower court say in this, but it's going to the Supreme Court and they'll be the ones who decide. So they won't pay that much attention at all to what any of these folks said. They'll think about it for themselves, and we'll get what we get.
Now, let me turn to you on this one, Mark, because you're an attorney, and I've learned to forgive you for that. I've always thought, actually, it should be constitutionally permissible to kill attorneys. And then I thought it should also be permissible to bill the city for taking out the trash, but that's another story. No, but all kidding aside,
you had some characters in Shakespeare, of course.
Yeah, from Dick the Butcher, right? But in your estimation, did you find it kind of bizarre that the guy was seemingly undercutting the very thing he supported?
Well, you got to remember who Jeffrey Sutton is. Jeffrey Sutton is a very right-wing conservative. In many ways, he's a leading light of the conservative movement. You remember the Democrats filibustered him for about 2 years until, by a very close margin, they got him in. He didn't get filibuster-proof majority. I think he got like 52 votes or so forth.
This is
a man who's very ideologically opposed to the bill, and that's fine. But he actually I got to give respect for this. He put his constitutional hat on. And he said, "Yeah, I'm opposed to the bill. I wouldn't vote for it. But as a constitutional jurist, I'm not a legislature, and I've got to uphold the Constitution. This thing is clearly constitutional. Obviously, it is. I don't think it's wise." And I have to say, I don't know that it's appropriate for a judge to say that legislation isn't wise. I mean, it's really just he could have said that in a speech if he wanted to. I don't know why he had to put it in the concurrence. But the heart of his point is, of course, this is constitutional. I don't happen to think it's wise. But let's face it, the American people got it passed through the Senate, through a filibuster, got 60 votes. And so I don't like it, but obviously it's constitutional. And the reason we know it's constitutional is, can I remember, even Justice Scalia said, and I think this is a ridiculous opinion, that if you grow marijuana in your own yard for your own use, that affects interstate commerce. If that affects interstate commerce, obviously health care, which is one-sixth of the nation's economy, is a lot more important than one pot plant in your yard.
Well, it's sort of the epitomizing of apple-orange comparison. One example, you're not being forced to grow the weed. In the other example, you're being forced to purchase the product. And let's remember there have been two district courts that have taken the opposite view, one effectively throwing it out when 26 states, including Florida, challenged that on the same constitutional grounds. David Mastio, to you, though, what we also have, however, is the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, and I believe it's in Georgia, memory serves, and it came out, it hasn't come out with its ruling yet, but the questioning, according to all reporters, it does seem as if it's leaning in the other direction, ready to throw it out, if you will. And the interesting thing here is that two of those three justices were Clinton appointees, and they have a definite problem with this. Now, again, we haven't gotten the ruling yet, but thus far, reporters have accurately extrapolated from questions given by the justices what direction they would eventually arrive at, and sure enough, they do seem to go there. And there was far more disproportionate challenge and intolerance for the government's argument than there was in support. Again, this is for the 11th Circuit. What's your sense of it?
Well, I mean, it's another one of those things that doesn't matter until we get the ruling. I've seen tons of cases where I've listened to the audio of the Supreme Court justices, and sometimes they can be really tough on the side that they ultimately take. I mean, especially if they're genuinely looking for good answers to use against the other side when they're arguing their case.
Well, again, I want to remind people very quickly, my position on this is yes, the Congress made a big mistake trying to predicate their authority to force us all to buy insurance on the Interstate Commerce Clause. I've read it a dozen times. Yes, the Interstate Commerce Clause does authorize Congress to regulate interstate commerce. However, it has never authorized Congress to force create the very commerce it would then get to regulate. By default, that
sure
makes
it
maneuver itself fulfilling prophecy with a catch-22 ending. Never has. Could never force you to buy anything. Never.
Congress regulates inaction all the time.
Not inaction, forcing you to making you commit inaction. It's never been able to do that.
Sure it does.
No.
It does it all the time. Congress, in fact, gives a tax break to people who have a child. If you don't have a child, they tax you more. This is a case where they tax you more if you don't buy health care. There are states that tax you more if you don't buy car insurance. This is actually very common. And Jeffrey Sutton, the conservative ideologue, he made it very clear that action or inaction both involve choices. If in this economy you decide you're going to go without health care and you're going to be a welfare case and just rely on American taxpayers if you get in trouble to pay for your health care, that's a cost that we all bear. And I thought that conservatives believed in individual responsibility. They didn't want people to just use the emergency room and charge us all. This is a case where individual responsibility trumps welfare cases.
You bill them.
You should be on the other
side. You bill them. You're assuming that people think they have a right to be taken care of for nothing upon arrival at the ER, and they don't. They may have the right to be immediately taken care of, but they don't have the right to tell the government it doesn't have the authority to bill them after the fact, or the hospital doesn't have to. I mean, that's epitomizing apple-orange comparison. Has absolutely not the least infinitesimal correlative relevance to the rub in question today. More on this upon a return. Folks, you are with Battleline, Main Street Radio Network. I'm Alan Nathan. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. I'm ever yours, Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is The Oasis. For those who have an aversion to the left-right, black-white, two-dimensional approach, and we're continuing, talking about the appellate court ruling on Obamacare going schizophrenic. Also, the president's speech reveals more weakness than strength. And looking at the 2012 elections, will the GOP lead with their winning punches against Democratic-led government coercion or with their lame swats against gay marriage? We have a system in the opining. Old friends to the show first, David Mastio, op-ed editor for The Washington Times. David, good to have you back.
Great to be here.
On board as well, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. radio host with Pacifica Radio's WPFW. Learn more about Mark on marklevineradio.com, marklevineradio.com. Good to have you back, Mark, as well.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm going to go to the president's speech and everything, but first, David, I want to go to you. As you heard, of course, New York went ahead and approved gay marriage. It was a bit of a sticking moment. The assembly actually wanted to compel religious institutions to also accept these ceremonies, and the Senate, the GOP-led Senate, were receptive to gay marriage. They just didn't think that these private institutions should be compelled. That was seemingly the bone of contention. Well, they got around it. The religious institutions will not be compelled to perform these marriages, but still, gays can be married. Everybody knows by now I'm not only pro-gay rights, I'm pro-gay marriage. It seems to me that the Republicans have so much of a winning hand, and everything right now, now. They've got the leverage of the debt ceiling to ensure that the Democrats, you know, even if they have to be dragged kicking and screaming, will be dragged nonetheless into accepting some huge spending cuts, finally. And so many other fronts, the American people with them in a whole host of ways. I mean, it was originally thought by the president of the Democrats that they could get away with forcing this debt ceiling hike and not have any spending cuts attached to it. But, of course, they were disabused of that assumption in poll after poll after poll. And as a consequence, the GOP held the vote on the president's position, failed miserably. The GOP were triumphant in that count. And they got so many things going for them. Why is it they want to get preoccupied with this? Because it does seem as if there's a lot of social conservatives who have forgotten that the tune that brought them success in 2010 was constitutional compliance and responsible spending and putting social issues off to the side. Do you see the GOP remembering the success of that strategy come 2012? David Mastio.
It's not just putting social issues to the side, because I don't think they should necessarily do that as a party. But what they do need to do is keep their message straight. And the message they have this year is a smaller federal government, more power for states and localities, decisions closer to the people. And if you're fighting for national marriage laws run out of Congress and trying to take that power away from the states, then you're messing up your message. And for that reason alone, I think Republicans ought to just stay out of this whole gay marriage thing and let legislatures act, and the national politics should ignore it.
Mark?
Well, I think that Republicans, I wish they followed their rhetoric. I mean, on states' rights, for example, I think states should have the right to determine their own drug laws. The Republicans say no. Even if the people vote to legalize marijuana, they're going to force them not to. Even if the people vote to ban machine guns, they're going to force them not to.
It was the Obama administration that is raiding medical marijuana places in California
right now.
The Obama administration,
because conservatives
not
support that law.
Republicans.
No, but that's the point. The Obama administration is enforcing a law that Republicans...
That silly law, don't they?
The Republicans passed a law that Obama as president is required to enforce. My point is that the Democrats believe in states' rights. They believe that states should be able to determine drug laws and gun laws and marriage laws. It's the Republican Party that believes in forcing a federal solution on individuals and states that don't want to abide by it, and it's contrary to their rhetoric.
The healthcare law. Do you have the faintest clue? It is all about telling the states what to do.
Absolutely not. In fact, in the health care law, there's a specific opt-out provision that I know Vermont is already accepting, saying if you can do it better, you be my guest. And Massachusetts will probably opt out as well.
Along with a giant list of rules that they've got to abide by.
You just have to cover everybody. Now, it's true that the Democrats don't want to leave a bunch of people starving and dead with no health care. But as long as you cover everybody, the health care law specifically allows states to opt out. And I think that's a good thing.
Well, there are folks who assert that we could have that same safety net realized by just letting insurance be sold across state lines. Because, let's face it, what was sold to us about this thing proved anything but accurate. And I'm pretty spot on about this. This methodology by which Obamacare coverage is facilitated is really predicated on funds getting double counted, expenditures mythically cut out, constitutional rights overtly violated. And of course, I'm referring to the rating of Medicare, the doctor fix, and the first decade skewed math. Let's take a look at this very seriously. All right, let's be candid here. They're securing $500 billion in waste, fraud, and abuse to keep it solvent, but then using that same $500 billion to fund the rest of healthcare. That's what they did. They said, we're going to secure $500 billion in waste, fraud, and abuse to maintain the solvency of Medicare. Oh, but then we're going to use that same $500 billion to fund the rest of the bill. That means we're counting the same money twice. Why the hell should people swallow this regardless of the intent? Why should people swallow this regardless of the intent? And also, the president promised that it would be deficit neutral, but here too, he lied, claiming
right,
that the $950 billion limit was met, and it made no sense. Why? Because $250 billion in Medicare reimbursements for doctors have been placed under differently titled legislation so as to appear as if they met the very goal they violated. Nobody's buying this, but I'm looking at the clock. It's 41 after the hour. I got to move on to some other topics. Let's go to the president. hate
real
speech.
Quick, the Congressional Budget Office says you're all wrong, Alan, and it actually saves us $1 trillion, just so we're clear. Go ahead.
No, actually, the Medicare actuary, Kenneth Foster, made it abundantly clear that odds are people are not going to be able to hold on to their same insurance plan as Obama promised, and it's going to cost more. Also, according to the Congressional Budget Office, we've got real problems, especially with Social Security. It's going to post a $45 billion shortfall in fiscal year 2011. And why? Because it's going to be paying out more in benefits than it accepts in payroll taxes. That's the math.
A
and also,
surplus in Social Security, Alan. You know that. Social Security is solvent for the next 25 years. I wish our budget was on good path as Social Security. That's ridiculous.
Where on earth did you ever hear that? You know who's in disagreement with you?
Social Security has a surplus.
You know,
who's
in disagreement with you?
It's only true if you pretend there's a surplus or you pretend that there's a trust fund.
There's none. And guess who said that? Guess who said that? Let me disabuse you. Guess who said that? Jack Lew. Okay? The OMB director. Now, he recently said...
Alan, I ask all your listeners to go look up and see whether there's a surplus in the Social Security Trust Fund. It is good for 25 years, and then after that...
there is no money. It's all IOUs. This is the art of movable standards, wherein you rename a thing as being something other than what it is in order to gain the ground your arguments otherwise could not. You either do it through mythical relabeling...
We're living on right now.
You either do it through fictional relabeling or mythical comparison. That's all that's happening. There are no dollars in Social Security. There's no dollars. There are IOUs... But unlike a bank's IOUs that's backed up with real currency, this government can only back it up with the option to print more money. And Jack Lew, who's head of the OMB, made that very clear. Matter of fact, let me share this with you from...
For 225 years,
this is from Krautheimer a little while ago.
This is
from Krautheimer, Charles Krautheimer a few months ago. He says, as Office of Management and Budget Director Jack Lew wrote in USA Today just a few weeks ago, the trust fund is solvent until 2037. That goes to Mark Levine's approach. Okay? Therefore, Social Security is now off the table in debt reduction talks. This claim is breathtakingly false. The pretense is that a flush trust fund will pay retirees for the next 26 years. Lovely, except for one thing. The Social Security Trust Fund is a fiction. And if you don't believe me, listen to the OMB's own explanation in the Clinton administration budget for fiscal 2000 under then-director who? Jack Lew, the very same guy. What does he say? The OMB explained that these trust fund balances are nothing more than a bookkeeping device. Quote, they do not consist of real economic assets that can be drawn down in the future to fund benefits. In other words, the Social Security Trust Fund contains nothing. And that's Jack Lew. So Jack Lew's saying one thing today, but he said something earlier. So my question to you, Mark, is, was he lying then or is he lying now?
If the Social Security Trust Fund, as you call it, is a mere fiction, then so is every Treasury bond, every Treasury bill, every U.S. savings bond that you buy for your children. If you, what you're saying is that the United States government is worthless and will not pay its debts. I don't think that's true. They're required by law to pay their debts. They've always paid their debts. Even in the Civil War, they paid their debts. They're going to pay their Social Security unless Republicans succeed in shutting the program down.
I said what I stated to be inferred as nothing more nor less than what I conveyed. Moving on to something else. The president's speech to you, David. He's saying it's unfair that we should side with people who want corporate jets and tax breaks for them while kids are going hungry. But the strange thing is, why would he scold the buying of planes for the tax break when said break was part of his own stimulus package and was used as a formula for getting jet manufacturers to expand their employee base in order to increase tax revenues?
And this is the fundamentally schizophrenic nature of the Obama administration. He wants jobs, he wants business expansion, but every time he gets an opportunity to attack it, to undermine it, he takes it. How can he do both? I don't know. It's something special Democrats do.
Mark, final word, how can he do both?
Alan, your facts are wrong. I'm going to talk about it on CNBC tonight at 7:40 p.m. Your facts are wrong. It's an 87 tax break, not the bonus depreciation.
Actually, that was an Associated Press story. Your complaint is with them, and I'll let you take it up with that august institution. But as per the norm, two great guys. Always a blast having you both on. Once again, David Mastio of the Washington Examiner. Also, Mark Levine of Pacifica
Times.
Radio. Folks, you are with Battleline, Main Street Radio Network. I'm Alan Nathan, and that's the Washington Times, not the Examiner. My apologies.